Have you ever wanted something so bad and tried so hard to get it, but always felt like you were coming up short? Man, in this episode, that's exactly what we're talking about. We talked to the lovely Camille and her husband, Sai, and how they continued to chase their dream no matter what circumstances came against them. I mean, the story is insane. You wouldn't believe me if I told you, but lucky for you, you get to hear it today. For any person who's chasing that dream, who has something that's close in their sight, and they feel like they can never get to it, I promise you, hope is there. Enjoy this last episode, and as always, at the end of it, check out my new song, Love Is Real. We love you guys. Here's Nights at the Roundtable. And welcome to another episode of Nights at the Roundtable. It's your boy, Manuel. To the left of me is Be Real, my queen over here, Angela Johnson. Babe, introduce your friends that are now our friends.
Okay, very excited about these guests, you guys. Okay, our good friends, Camille and Sai, are here. And not only are these people amazing people with amazing hearts that you're about to find out for yourself on this episode, but they're super talented. Sai is a producer, music artist, just all around awesome dude with the coolest accent that I keep making fun of and
he's
trying to
London
mimic.
Bloke.
Yes, he's from London.
He's from London,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's good.
All right.
Thank you so much. I've been practicing a little bit. Super talented dude. My friend Camille here, amazing actress, philanthropist. She, you may recognize her from Prison Break. Gotta kick it up. Come on, let's keep
I'm gonna
it
watch that movie. I really am.
Oh my god, don't.
I will.
He loves cheerleading movies, is the thing. I'm surprised he hasn't god, seen
really?
It because he's seen all the. He's already watching the cheer Netflix documentary.
Super
and I was a cheerleader, but he's like obsessed with cheerleading stuff. And funny story about me and Camille, we met at an audition. Because here's how it works in the entertainment industry. You get an audition, let's say, for like a detective, right? And they're looking for a Latina detective. You know, it was probably like mid-20s when we first met. They need to be like mid-20s, whatever. And then you're like, oh, I'm about to crush this. And you put on like your jeans and your leather jacket or your blazer and your boots. And then you walk in thinking you're going to be like the star. And then you see like 14, 15 other girls wearing the exact same thing you're wearing. And they look exactly like you.
Kind of like today, we were like, we're going to do a podcast. Yeah. We're going to wear a striped shirt.
We're both wearing stripes. Like, we do this a lot. And so we met at an audition, and then we just kept seeing each other at auditions and then became friends. And then even now, we're going out for, like, mom roles, and we're still still right there with each other.
We still got it.
So that's how Camille and I became friends. When we were supposed to be against each other competing, we're like, I like you. I like you too.
Yeah. It's much better that way. It's bad when you don't get along with the people. I get along with everybody. It's when they don't get along with you or they just kind of give you like shade, you know, when you walk into the, I don't like that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know. I've done one audition before.
Tell us about it.
Well, what'd you audition for?
It's really bad. Hyundai commercial.
Nice.
Yeah. I walked in and they were like, slate your name. And I was like, just standing there, and they're like, that means say your name and your agency. I was like, oh, why don't you just say that then? Like, why are you gonna say slate? So I was like, what up, man? Well, I said my agency. And then they go, okay, so here's the thing. You don't say any words, and in 10 seconds, you see the Hyundai, you like the Hyundai, you see a girl, you like the girl, you invite the girl to get into the Hyundai with you, and you drive off. Action. I thought it was a prank. I was like, man, you funny, bro. And they were just staring at me. And I was like, oh, crap, you mean serious, right? And I was not prepared for this. So I literally was just like, and I turned around. I was like, peace, I'm out. And I left. I didn't even wait to hear anything that they said. I was like,
that's
I'm
like a
out.
Mr. Bean moment.
This sucks. And then that other time I did an audition, remember, down in Santa Monica? I don't remember what movie it was for. But I sucked in that one, too. I'm not good
You should take an audition class.
Yeah, I
or
should do
not.
Something with my life.
It's funny, you and the Honda.
Hey, but let's talk about this wine. This Francis Coppola. Coppola?
Coppola.
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 Francis Coppola.
Oh, I think it's Coppola.
You
Coppola.
Is it Coppola?
Francis yeah, I think Ford it's Coppola. Coppola.
Okay, yeah. It's Coppola.
It's Coppola. Coppola.
Yeah, it's a 2016 Chardonnay. From Sonoma County, which is Northern California.
That's in Cali?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Ish. Northern. No, it's in California. It's in Northern California, though.
Yeah, north of San Francisco.
And is it? So, yeah.
It's nice. Be it film or wine, directing is about the creative choices that capture an artistic vision. Okay, Coppola. Whatever you want. Coppola. So we're going to get down with that. Let's do a little cheers and let everybody know this time.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Still don't like wine.
Ooh.
I'm having a hard
that's
time.
Nice.
Is it?
Nice. I like
is
it.
I actually like it, man.
Okay, good.
It's not,
right?
It's not too
it's
sweet.
It's buttery, as they say, for Chardonnays.
Is it?
Yeah. It's got a crisp bite.
Wait, they say buttery for Chardonnays?
They do. And you can actually, the aftertaste is a little buttery. Try that again.
Yeah. Now, he goes right into away, it thinking, I'm going to hate this, and then so he
not right
it.
Away. Now, after it settles, tell me what you taste. Do you taste the butter?
I feel like it's definitely like a, it's smooth. I don't know if that's the butter feeling.
Do you
feeling.
Taste?
Nah. Mm. To be honest, though, I did brush my teeth before this, so I could be just tasting Crest.
Yeah, you can't.
I apologize.
Buttery Crest.
To all wine connoisseurs.
Buttery
like,
Crest.
They're like, get over your teeth.
All right. Well, listen, you guys, we're very happy to have Camille and Sai here today. They have such an amazing story, and they recently had a baby. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Snaps all around. But their journey to having this baby is quite intense, and I just wanted you guys to come on and just share a little bit about that.
But first, let's start off with their meat story, because we were telling it off camera, I like it, and I wish it was on camera.
I know.
So
okay,
let's just push
tell
rewind.
Us a little bit about how you guys met,
because this is good,
and then let's go into after you got married and when you decided you wanted to have kids and take it from there, or if we missed something in between, give us that too.
Okay, you go.
Okay, so we met totally random. Oh, sorry. I was minding my own business around midnight, hanging around Melrose.
That's a funny sentence. I was minding my own business around midnight.
That's a good
Melrose.
Some people really need to hear that. 2020 is your year to mind your business.
You were walking home.
You know what? I went. I didn't have many friends here because I just sort of moved here. Okay. I hadn't moved here. I was working here. I was at a midnight AA meeting.
Okay.
And left my car outside this bar. My ex-manager was standing outside this bar. He pointed her out in his French accent, which I'm not going to do. That's the girl from Prison Break. She's so hot. Checked her out. Thought, she's not bad. She came up to me. I think you asked me for a cigarette,
right? I think
right?
I bummed a cigarette off.
Bummed a cigarette.
I do not smoke. I don't advocate smoking, but I did smoke.
you did smoke then. Did a good English accent. Thought she was English. And had another...
Thank you.
I knew another guy in there who was also English, who was trying to get with you, wasn't he?
Yep.
And he asked me to keep her friend company for him, and he probably regrets it now.
He asked you to take one for the team and keep her friend company.
Me, we hung out. I won't name names, but it was taking one for the team.
Well, you did. You took one for the team. You took one. You took her. Yeah. You took Camille. Yeah.
So he made a bit of a fool of himself, and she paid more attention to me. We connected. I gave my number. I texted her. She completely ignored it.
Yeah, like
okay. This is the thing, guys. We're talking 9, 10 years ago.
Okay,
there were no iPhones. It was Blackberries. Mm-hmm. So when a +44 number comes up on the BlackBerry, that's expensive. It's free how it is now with Apple. So
right.
I thought to myself, well, he texted me. Did I get home okay? Yeah, I got home okay. I'll text him like later.
It was 99 cents.
It was probably a lot.
Let me save up to reply.
It was probably a lot of money. Okay, so yeah, I didn't text him back. And then.
I still don't believe that story. 100%
true.
Excuse.
And then I swear to you, I lost the number. Somewhere along the lines, it like erased and I couldn't find it.
Messages don't self-erase.
But I was talking about him to my friend. And then next thing I know, a week later, I'm hiking on Runyon Canyon and I see this hair that's like flopping up and down.
I have floppy pink hair, but yeah, can I say something?
Yeah.
I've never been to Runyon Canyon in my life. And the guy I was working with that morning was like, we're going to go and hike Runyon Canyon. I was like, cool, we'll do whatever. And
I think he might have been in flip-flops.
I was. I don't know why you stopped me. But to be... walk past each other at the same time when I was due to leave probably a week later.
It was
for
a
good.
Week later. Wow.
For good. I was never coming back. I didn't like
it. Wow.
Wow.
And I heard this girl call my name.
I'm like, Simon. Simon, is that you? It's Camille.
And the craziest thing too is I was hiking with my friend and I was just saying, I'm taking a dating sabbatical. That's it. I'm done with guys. You know, I need to have the butterflies. I'm done with this whole dating scene in LA. Mm. And then here comes Sai walking down the canyon.
Flip-flopping down the canyon.
I was a proper mess.
I mean, it was. His hair was like this, like flopping up and down, like, you know, rabbit's ears. And I was like, hi, how are you? He's like, you didn't call me back. I was like, I didn't, but I was going to, you know, the whole story, but it cost a lot of money. And then I lost your number and he totally didn't believe me. And then he was like, you know, do you fancy a date? And I was like, I do. And my friend's like, what was that? You just told me you're going on a dating sabbatical. I'm like, I know, but I also said that I needed to get the butterflies again. And I got the butterflies when this guy asked me out.
I love that.
It was just the accent.
I mean, after our first date, I shut that door. And I did like one of those movie moments where I just like went down on the floor. And I was like, that's the guy I'm going to marry.
After the first date?
We had an intense first date. We went to see
a movie.
Paranormal Activity. which we didn't really like the film, but we stayed up until
six, seven
in the morning, just talking.
I had to beg him to kiss me at the end of the night. I was like, please. I mean, morning. I was like, do you mind? Yeah, can you kiss me, please? Yeah. Like, I'm only staying up so you can kiss me right now. No, but we talked. By the end of it,
but the morning, that morning, I was due to leave LA for good. Like, I was gone.
Oh, wow.
So.
Yeah,
I came back before I went to the airport. I drove back in my rented Nissan, and you weren't there.
No, I was on a hike.
And I texted her. She ran back, and then we had a kiss, and we had
the sparks. It was the moment.
That was like God gave you that gift, and He texted you, and then you messed it up, and God was like, "No, no, no, I'm not gonna let you mess this one up.
I gotta hook this one up.
Yeah. Hold on, one more time. Here, go on a random hike in a place you've never even heard on, real quick.
Right?
That's crazy.
Right?
I love that. So then you went home to London.
I left.
And my movie was on the plane. So he got to watch me. No, he didn't do it. He was like,
I couldn't watch it.
He's like, this is horrible.
I didn't like
the Journey movie.
No,
it was Ghost of Girlfriend's Past. And
oh wait, with McConaughey.
Yeah. So I was like, oh movie. My god, my movie was. And you got to watch me like when you were leaving me. And he's like, it was horrible. I couldn't watch it.
I
thought it was gonna be that romantic thing. This is the girl.
I think I skipped the other scenes and watch your scenes because I remember some of your scenes in it, so I did watch it.
Yeah, and then he wrote me a song called Camille and sent it to me when he got home.
This is some romantic stuff. I don't want to talk about how you haven't written me a song called Angela, but it's fine.
I wrote you songs, babe.
I had to share those with other wives and spouses.
No, it didn't.
A general love song.
I was in a group.
It was a general love song.
I was in a group. I can't X her out. I mean, sheesh.
Okay, so wait. So you went home to London. When did you come back? And was it like, I'm coming back for you? I'm moving here for, like, what was that? And then how long did it take for you guys to get engaged and then married?
Camille turned up in
Let's start with, we spoke every single day, no lie, on Skype because it wasn't FaceTime.
Skype
every single day for like at least 4 to 8 hours.
We really got to know each other.
Wow.
Like I would work out on the phone with him, I would get my hair cut and I bring my computer, I would go to coffee and I bring my computer and be like, here's my boyfriend, everybody. Like, it was insane. I was like, meet my boyfriend. This is Sai.
Meet my boyfriend. Laptop open.
Yeah. It was a laptop. I brought my laptop everywhere I went.
But the time difference was so nuts. I'd do it in bed. I'd be up all night.
Yeah. Oh, because this is like nine hours.
And then he'd go to the studio without sleeping.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I think I invited you to come over or you invited yourself.
I came over. We had one date. My mom thought I was crazy. She's like, "Tú estás loca." You only had one date with this guy and you're going over to London to spend a week with him. I was like, yes.
2 weeks.
Well, it ended up turning into 2 weeks, but it was a week originally.
Romantic.
And then when I was there, I was like, I can't leave. I need to do another week.
Yeah.
And it was in the middle of pilot season. My dad's like, okay, if this girl's going to leave in the middle of pilot season, she definitely is into this guy.
Yep, she thinks it's worth it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you move back here?
And then you came to visit.
I didn't like it, but I'll be honest with you. When she left after spending 2 weeks with her, I was more than sad.
Mm.
Like, I was I was crying a lot. Like, I wow. really felt something I never felt before.
Wow.
Like, and I mean, there isn't much call for, you know, we were talking about maybe you coming to London, but being an actress, like, she was, how am yeah. I going to get a job in,
yeah.
in EastEnders yeah. on English TV? So I came back for Christmas. I met her family in San Diego for the first time. And then Christmas Day, I took her dad aside and I said, I want to marry her daughter.
Go on, as he was taking out the trash.
He was shaking out the trash.
That's how
he did it. No one was happy.
Her no mom, one was
her
happy?
Her mother was not oh my happy. Gosh. Her mother cried.
I came out like this. Goodness. My mom was like, no!
No!
Yeah.
Oh, my. I was like, yes!
I had all my... I put bandages on my hands. She said I broke my wrist because she hated tattoos. So I'm,
like the tattoos.
And then she starts screaming, crying, and I'm just sweating like in front of her two brothers and her dad, and no one... it's an uproar.
Oh, wait, no.
Damn.
Wow.
No one was happy.
Well,
no
I was, because he had
she
just,
was happy.
He just met my family, and I was thinking, okay, they're going away for New Year's Eve, so he's going to do it around New Year's Eve. We'll give a week to, like, meet the family, get to know everybody. No. This guy is like, I think she's going to know that I'm going to do it on New Year's Eve, so I'm going to do it a day after I meet her family. I was like, the first thing I said to him was not yes. I said, did you ask my dad? And he was like, yeah. I'm like, and did he say yes? Yes. Okay, yes.
So he did tell you yes, though.
His hands were up, like lifting up the trash can lid. And when I asked him, I don't know why I did that at the time, and he slammed it down. He didn't say yes. You know, his words were something like...
He was nervous. He was anxious.
He was like, I've never seen her so into someone. So if she's okay with it, I'm okay with it.
She's a smart girl.
Kind of yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right, yeah. Right.
I took it as a yes.
Yeah. When did they come around and be like, okay, we're happy for you?
Last week. Yeah.
she told me last Thanksgiving, she said, after you got married, I was still hoping you'd go away.
Right. Oh, I mean, wow. Not like that.
Sure, sure, sure.
No, she did.
I mean.
She did, promise you.
Wow. My mom took longer than my dad. My dad is more of a softy.
But a legit, like it took years, like years.
For my mom.
I had to earn their trust and respect.
Mm. I mean, she was always still very sweet with him, but, you know, had her moments of...
How about the brothers? When did your brothers come around?
Oh, they were immediate.
They were on board.
Yeah, they were immediate.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
That helped.
Yeah. Yes, it that does help. Sibling support is
Well, yeah, you never know. You never know how important family is until you marry into one. And then you realize, damn, this really, like, you really do need to like each other. In-laws need to be cool.
Right.
Because if not, it's going to be hell.
Mm. And especially you marrying into a Latino family.
Yeah. That was a shock.
Because he didn't speak too at first. Like, why does he not speak? Why does he not speak? I don't understand. I'm like, well, because everyone's talking over him. You got to give him a second to like say something.
Y'all being real Spanish right now.
I'm like, just like ask a question and then don't say anything else. Let him answer.
That is nuts. Okay. So then engaged Christmas. And then when did you get married?
April 2000. So a year and a half later.
A year and a half later, yeah. You get married. Did you guys want kids right away, or
I didn't. Did you
didn't want kids, or
no? It's, you know, I was always, it's weird because I never was thinking about kids. I never was the girl who like dreamt about my wedding, and I knew it was going to happen at some point. I just wasn't. My focus was my career, and so when I got married, I started to think about it, but definitely was not on my radar. When it started to get on my radar, I realized that he was nowhere near wanting to have kids. And you're what, 4 years younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
So internally that was a thing for me, but I didn't really express it to him. But for you, you didn't want kids, right?
At the time, I couldn't even take care of myself.
Yeah. Mm.
I had to overcome a lot of... I had to grow up.
Well, you were...
I wasn't ready.
How old were you when you got married?
Age-wise, I was 30, but I missed out on a lot of life, and I was a little boy. Mm. Like, I was very immature.
Well, you were also... Can we talk about your sobriety or no?
Sure. Yeah. I was a couple of years sober.
Mm.
I was doing heroin for a long time. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if I even wanted to be a functional life person.
Right.
Mm.
So kids weren't on my radar at all.
You were still figuring out your journey and what you wanted.
Totally. I was lost. I was lost. So yeah, I wasn't thinking about kids.
But even in being lost, you gathered enough type of, like, I guess it would call sense to be like, oh, I don't want to let this person go though.
Totally. Yeah.
That's interesting.
I was lost, but I was looking forwards and not looking back. I was definitely trying to make sense of it all. So when I saw somebody, like, I was like, no, this person can, like, greatly, like, help me be a good, decent person and enjoy my life, like, then I'm not letting this go.
That's interesting, because we've had multiple conversations with women on this podcast about what men would do for a woman that they knew was it. Because we've talked with our friend Bobby, she's single now, and a couple other women that have been on this podcast. There's always this thing of like, I'm bending over, I'm compromising, I'm doing a lot of like laying down my morals to try to accommodate this boy who is insanely immature. Mm. But I see glimpses of like, oh, he can be great.
Totally.
You know, why is he ghosting me? Why is he this or why is he that? And I'm like, man, I'm telling you, when you meet the right dude, there is nothing that's gonna stop that person from getting to you. Nothing. Perfect example.
Right.
Coming out of a life of heroin, out of, you know, still just sobriety, living across the freaking globe.
Right.
You know, fully says, no, I'm gonna move to America, even though I don't like it. Mm-hmm. LA, I don't like it. You know, I don't know anything else about my life. None of this all makes sense.
Right.
But she does. Mm. So whatever it takes, I'm going to make that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is like beyond, if you're a woman hearing this, like, and you're with a dude that you're, he's still giving you weird signs. It's like, bruh.
You'll know.
If he wants you, there ain't nothing that's going to stop this dude from getting you.
If he's not willing to drive from the Valley to Santa Monica.
Or if he asks you for gas money, he ain't the one. But my question is more so, none of this was a red flag to you? Did you not see it as a red flag?
Good question. You know, I didn't. I was so in love that I kind of stepped in with my emotions first. And then my head was like back here.
Yeah.
Which is why our first year of marriage was like, was really tough.
Yeah. Which they say it always is.
Yeah. But it was tough because we were also still getting to know each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, dealing with 2 years of sobriety, I'm not sober. Not that I'm
a
mess doing drugs, but, you know, I had my wine at the time and I think I smoked a little bit of weed to go to sleep at the time.
No, and you're like, didn't.
No, I did. And you were like, you can't do that.
Yeah, I said, I can't be around it.
I'm like, that's cool, but I'm not getting rid of my wine.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's fine, but wine, right? No. I need my wine. I think in just like having two different personalities coming together and living together and, you know, we were figuring it out. And so that first year, was a little bit tough. You know, and I think I had to start going to like an Al-Anon too, to start figuring out like, how do you navigate a new 2 years sober is new.
Mm-hmm. But I think you stayed because you saw something deeper.
Oh,
you
know? For sure. No, it's, you know, people say you don't marry the potential in someone, marry the person. And I did, but also he did have like immense potential in things. Which I just loved him for everything that he was. So none of that was going to stand in the way for me. It was tough. It was challenging, but it wasn't something that I was going to be like, no.
See, and this begs another thing. Cause whenever I talk to another friend of ours, and her past is kind of, you know, it's riddled with a lot of craziness. Mm-hmm. And she is sometimes afraid to
share
because she's like, oh, these people are going to look at me like I'm broken, I'm dirty, right. I'm whatever. And I keep telling her, I'm like, the right person is going to look at all that and be like, damn, and you're still here.
Yeah.
Like that's
of course dope.
Like that right. That's a testament. You're still here and you're still positive and you're still trying to do right things. Like that to me is beautiful.
Yeah.
Most of the guys up to now have been using it against her. But I'm like, another sign, they are not the right person.
Right.
I mean, she's like struggling to like convince them, I'm not that anymore. I'm not that. I'm, you know. And I'm like, man, you don't have to do that. Because again, the right person will see your mess and be like, man, but this person is beautiful. Like there's something about them.
And I think it's also what they say, opposites attract. Like I had none of his background that he had, and he had none of mine. So there was something about his, because he was very heavy, dark. And there was something about that darkness and something about my lightness that just kind of blended together. Mm. And, you know, maybe I needed some of that in my life. You know, maybe waking up being like, good morning, 24/7 was not so great, you know, and he would wake up. I needed some of that.
I don't know.
I think
I needed some of what you had.
Yeah, I just, but I feel like you always, there is something that you need from that other person. And we were 100% opposite.
Well, that's
would you say you and Maddie are 100% opposite?
Not 100%. There are definitely some different things, you know. I'm a lot more like I can go into a room, I could be loud, I could be that. And Maddie's much more reserved. Yeah. Like she's a lot more quiet. And she really takes a lot of time to like build your trust and get open. But yeah, like we are different though. Cause I mean, I'm coming from California. She's coming from Alabama. I come from obviously a very progressive space. She comes from a very conservative space. Right. I mean, like Trump is not necessarily my guy. Her family, her mom is like a huge Trump supporter.
Yeah.
So definitely there are some opposite things. So there's obviously some very interesting conversations when we go home and we're trying to get each other's point of view. So
I didn't even know Maddie was as cool as she was, because until we all went out and she started dancing.
Yeah, because she's like,
yeah, I like this stuff. And I'm like, oh, shit. Maddie's like, one of us.
What? She can rap Drake? What?
Because if you meet his wife, she's like super proper, white, like just very, really? Just like, you know.
But she got some hood in her a little bit.
Yeah.
We, listening to Kristen Lucas and the, you know, marriage retreat that we went to, and they're talking about, you know, yeah, the old saying opposites attract, but what they were teaching is that your trauma will attract their trauma and vice versa. And there's something about that person that's going to draw out the things in you that may look like it's a quality that's like not good, but they're drawing out something that you need to work on.
Yeah.
And that's the perfect person who's going to bring it out of you and help you work on that.
That's great.
And which is why sometimes you butt heads like this, because they're the perfect person to draw out what you need. Mm. And then in the end, the iron sharpens iron becomes a beautiful thing. But the process of iron sharpening iron is painful. It's ugly. It hurts. Yeah. But then when it's done, it's beautiful. It's stronger. And so sometimes opposites are supposed to attract to do those things.
I think it's really the only way to be balanced, because we're super opposite. The same in core values, finances,
right?
Spirituality, you know, that like the 10 poles that you build a relationship on. Mm. Like we're pretty the same as far as like what we believe. Everything else, like opposite. But that's good, because I've always wondered like why the type that I was going for was a specific type.
Well, cheerleader.
Yeah. Cheerleader.
We know you.
White. I was just dating white girls and, you know, whatever. And I didn't, like, I loved them, but at the same time, I don't really remember too much personal growth. I don't remember a lot of personal growth, because it was kind of like what I liked, and it was comfortable. Like, I wasn't really being challenged on certain things. Yeah. And then I get with this girl, and then I'm forced to challenge myself on everything. Like, why did I like those certain things? Was I liking it for reasons of depth, or was it more like a shallow thing?
Right.
And then I like had to answer a lot of questions of myself. And then she's so family, about family. And I wasn't raised that way. Like, we've never had a dinner at a table before.
We were just talking about that. Really? And you're Puerto Rican?
Ever.
He never met his grandparents.
Yeah, I don't know grandparents. My mom really just kind of like had a bad taste with my father's family, and so we never got introduced to them. None of our family. It was just me, my immediate family, And then like an aunt and uncle, my sister. Like
his aunts and uncles and cousins that I've met are his military aunts and uncles and cousins. So they're not blood, but they're his family. Those are the only family that of his that I have a relationship with. And
so it was difficult getting down with the Mexican family or just even a Spanish family. Like the first time she was like, we're going to Christmas and I show up and there's like mad people there. I was like, I don't know. I just like sat down.
I would be mad that he wouldn't memorize people's names. And he's like, there's like 50 people here. Like I see them once a year.
Yeah. I'm used to people coming in and out of my life. I'm like, I'm not going to have to remember you.
Yeah. I'm going to see you once every other year. Right. You know, if you can make it.
We're
for
not
going
to be close. So I won't remember you. The ones that are close, I'll remember. But I had to start learning how to care. And being married to her, I started caring about my nieces, my nephew, because I didn't.
Right.
Because I never had an uncle. I didn't even know what that relationship looked like. It was weird. And now I'm all about my nieces and nephews now. So that's, I think opposites are.
It's easy to choose people who can keep you in your comfort zone, you know, so you don't have to challenge yourself and you don't have to feel uncomfortable. You know, but when it's not enough for you, when you're not growing,
right,
and your life doesn't really evolve, you don't become the person you think you can be, like, and you start meeting other people who challenge it, like that's what you said, personal growth comes. But like you said, like that's when pain comes.
That opposite attraction, and it has some ugly days, but ultimately beautiful days. And so you guys had your beginning that was rough and weren't sure about kids. You kind of thought it, but you knew he wasn't ready for it. When you guys decided to actually try to have kids and you were ready to be parents, was it that you were ready or were you just like, well, let's just give it a go? Or like, how did that switch happen?
First, the whole topic is very, I think it's hard to start, but we started talking about it first. And I think we talked about it for a year, like in passing, joking around with our friends. Like that was going on for about a year before we actually took action, which is interesting because I talked to a lot of my friends who are in that same boat now of like starting. I said, have the conversation. Just start talking about it. Just open your mouth and start bringing it up at a party.
Let the words come out.
Start bringing up a party, even if it's like a side thing, like, you know, maybe someday we'll have kids, you know, or I'm thinking someday soon. Like you just start by that. And then a year later, you were actually the one who initiated.
I think I just got to a point where like, I was always like, when this happens or when then I'll be ready when that happens. And I sort of, as I matured, I was like, there is no time. I'm never, the time is now. Like the future is a concept. Like it's not here. And I was like, I know what biological clock ticks for a woman, you know, and I think I had recurring dreams that I'd have a little girl, and I used to carry this little girl on my shoulder, and the euphoric feeling I would have, I would wake up and be so sad that feeling was gone. So I knew, like, I wanted to be a dad, and it was just like, let's stop giving in to fear, and let's just let's run with it, you know.
That's what we need, babe. If that happens. I want a dream like that.
Did you see that side? We need a dream. We need a vision of the Lord.
That.
If the Lord don't speak in a vision and Brandon don't translate that vision for me, then I don't know. Brandon translates dreams.
Yeah, because I'd be trying to push myself to that place. And I'd be like looking at little kids and I'd be like, let me pretend right now. Yeah. And then when I wake up, I'm like, I'm so glad I get to get in my car and do whatever the hell I want. I don't have to ask permission.
So this dream was reoccurring, you said?
Recurring, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So like
strong, man.
And that feeling felt so real in the dream.
The feeling, like I've never experienced a feeling in my day-to-day normal life of that magnitude, of that euphoria.
I mean, when he met me, though.
don't forget about me.
Like, it was a surreal feeling.
That's crazy.
So you brought the conversation back up, and you were like, I'm game.
Yeah. So it's interesting because when we first decided, okay, let's do this, you know, let's do this the real way, the way we're supposed to do it, to have a baby. You think, you know, your whole life, you're just like, oh, don't do it like that. Because if you do, you're going to have a baby.
Yeah.
So the first time we did it, I thought I was pregnant. I was like, oh my gosh, my boobs are big. I'm like feeling some stuff. No, literally. I mean, I went over to my friend's house who just had a baby and I was like, oh, I think I'm pregnant. I'm like, I'm 10 days late. I think I'm pregnant. Look at my boobs. They're so big. And she's like, oh my God, congratulations. I'm like, Thank you. And then one day I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not pregnant. Mm-hmm. So that happened a lot. Mm. That happened for about, I think, 6 months or 8 months. 6 months, maybe. And then he brought it up. He was just like, because he was friends with, what do they call it? Are they called the proctologist?
No, he was a fertility doctor.
Oh.
Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm like, well, okay. Anyway,
he's a medicine man.
That's why I asked him about.
He burns sage. It's fine.
Yeah. So he asked this guy, this doctor, who is a fertility doctor, and he said, and so he came to me and said, you know, maybe we should think about going to a fertility clinic. And I was like, really? Didn't even cross my mind.
How old were you? 37?
I was 37, maybe. I was turning 38 when we started. Yeah. So I was 37 when we first went in. And he suggested this guy on Thousand Oaks, and we went. And we did the blood test. And he was basically like, okay, so we're going to do this like next week or, you know, not next week. But he was like, you need to do this now.
Wow.
And I was like, really? He's like, yeah. And so I'm looking at all these numbers. Do you want to say something?
No.
Okay. I'm looking at all these numbers and I'm like, what does this mean? He's like, well, he's like, your AMH, for those of you who are in the fertility, there's two tests that are really important. It's called FSH and AMH. And I'm an advocate of all women trying to get these tests to figure out where you are on the spectrum. Mm. Those levels will tell you, you know, how fertile you are. Mine, I was starting at like a 50-year-old.
Wow.
And so I looked at this woman, this nurse, and I was like, so this isn't, I mean, can I get pregnant? And she was like, yeah, you can. She's like, but you just need to do this now. She's like, because it may not happen the first time. And I was like, okay. And that was a shock to my system. I walked out of there and was just in like complete disbelief. You know, here I am like living my life and living our life and our marriage and thinking that I'm Latin. I'm going to get pregnant.
Right.
I'm going to get pregnant the first time we do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to have that realization hit of, oh, you're actually in bad shape. Wow. So it was not a fun place to start from. Do you have anything to say about that? No?
No, I think this is, you know, this is your story here.
Yeah. It's one of those things at that moment where I went through a lot. I was trying to hold it together, trying to be, you know, I'm not a person that likes to dwell on negativity. So I was holding on to, she didn't say that I can't get pregnant. She said that it's possible, but it's just going to take a while. So I just kind of amped up and was like, all right, I'm going to get pregnant this first time we do this. Right. So I just tried to do everything right. Tried to take all the vitamins and everything they said, took all the medication the right way. And we got a good number of embryos and good number for me was 5. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I didn't think we were going to get anything. And then, or eggs. And then we had 2 that became embryos and matured. And then they didn't make it. Like there's a whole process and we can get into that another time, but they didn't make it. So, and there were 2 boys, we had them tested and, it didn't make it. So when that happened, that was a bigger blow. 'Cause I was like, wow, okay, hold on a second. So this really might not work, but I'm not going to believe for that. I'm going to believe that this is going to work. Let's change doctors. So now I'm talking around and I was like, oh, it's a sign. I was talking to somebody else and somebody else said this doctor and I wanted this doctor beforehand. And I think he's like the Kardashians doctor. So like, this is going to be the one, you know? So we did, we went to him and he was like the guru of all gurus here in Los Angeles. And, you know, I think we went to him and had 1 IUI done, which is an insemination of his sperm. And that didn't work. I was like, oh my gosh. And then I was shooting a series in Atlanta. So I was like, oh, but we can't, like time can't go by. So what am I going to do? I have to go to Atlanta. So he said, okay, well, I'm going to put you on the medication. We're going to get you all fertile and we're going to fly him out every time you ovulate. I was like, okay, great. So flying him out, I think I'm pregnant again. First time it happens. I'm like, I'm pregnant. Oh my gosh.
My boobs hurt.
My boobs hurt. I'm like feeling it. It's day one of shooting.
Oh, wow.
Day one of shooting. They're like, okay, everybody on set. And I tell PA, I'm like, let me just go in my trailer real quick. I have to go to the bathroom. And I'm like, oh, I'm not pregnant. And now I have to go out there with all these people that I don't know. And I was like, devastated. Not to mention I'm on hormones. Mm. So by this point, we were already maybe like maybe the third or fourth, third time we've done it.
50 grand, 60 grand into it as
So that, I'm like, I walk out and I'm trying to hold it together. And I'm trying to hold it together. And like the only person who knew was my wardrobe guy. And he's like, what's the matter? And I was like, I'm not pregnant. And he was like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, it's okay. It's fine. I'm like, just, you know, don't let anybody know because I can't tell anybody that I'm, you know, trying to get pregnant because I may not get, you know, if the show goes to second season.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things as an actress, like you work so hard for your career. And here I am playing a pregnant woman, by the way. My character was pregnant. Wow. And I couldn't talk about it because, sorry, but the producers were male. And even if they were female, still, I've run into issues with that. You can't tell them. Because your job, you want job security, right? Mm-hmm. And you work so hard to get there, you know, you can't, you don't want to lose it. So if I told them, and here was me like on, you know, lunch break, running down to like, I forgot the college, but there's a hospital over there, running over there and then telling them, oh, I think I burst a cyst in my ovaries. So I'm here in the hospital. I'll be back in like an hour, you know, running back and forth, trying to get this done. Without telling anybody what I was doing. And eventually opened up to the women on my fellow actors who were great. Fiona Gubelman and Vanessa Williams. And they were awesome. Helped me out so much to get through it. But I couldn't tell the producers. Like one of the producers actually said, you know, so second season, if this gets picked up, we're going to have you lose the baby because it's just not sexy, is it? And I'm like,
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Guess not. So, anywho, guess I won't be telling you what I'm doing.
Wow.
Man. Yeah. So by the, you know, at that point, that was a whole year of going through that before we even started our actual IVF journeys. Like that was just.
That was pre-IVF?
We did two IVFs by that point, one IUI. And then like we really hit it after that. Because now we had like more money from shooting this show and mm-hmm. I had the time, I was back at home and, you know, I could really like do this. And
so then what was the next step?
I mean, the next step was, you know, him and I had a lot of conversations. Like it's.
We were trying to buy a house.
Oh, yeah.
We realized that if we can't, we actually put an offer in the house, which was accepted.
We were in escrow in a house.
And we had to pull it out because we were like, this is going to cost us our life savings. Wow. Are we gonna do this?
Wow.
Yeah, it was actually our money guy said, you're going through IVF. Maybe you should don't do the house yet because it could take a while. I'm like, it's not going to take that long. We're going to get it done. It's just that I've been busy. It was always like never having like enough time. I'm like, I've just been busy. The first time that we did it, I'm like, he just rushed me into it. If I had like 6 months to prepare and like take all the medication that I needed, you know, the vitamins, then it would have gone right. So I was never really thinking that this wasn't going to happen until that next one that happened that didn't happen. I started to think, okay, you know, maybe we need to have some conversations. And it's the hardest thing to let go of. Just when do you say stop? When do you say enough's enough?
You said we had that, and I think I remember you saying like we stop when we have no money left. And I was like, that's when I realized that, oh, you are prepared to make us completely like destitute to have a baby, you know, which is scary.
Sure.
You know, and I think I remember thinking, well, we could have a house and we could be rolling around in this house Christmas times, looking at each other like, happy Christmas. Or we can have a little rented house, if that's what it takes, and have a house full of love and happiness. And like, I was like, I think we both agreed, let's just do it.
Wow.
We stepped out in faith, man, like to... I mean, I don't think... I wasn't confident, because when you hit, like, 3, 4, 5 times of, like, you know, all right, we're, like, 120 grand in, right? And this does not work anytime. Like, you don't believe... You can try and force yourself to think, oh, one more time, it will work. But you don't believe it.
I did. Wow. That's the problem. I did.
Okay, well...
Yeah, I believed it. I was... Because they tell you, you just need one. This is, you know, if you ever go in, this is what they say. You just need one. It's kind of a gamble. It's a numbers game. You know, you have all these eggs, and in these eggs that you have, one of them can be the golden ticket. So there is a probability. Like, the more times you try, the more times you will have a possible, like, golden embryo. So I was just like, well, what if next time is the time? You know, right. What if that is the time, and right. We're just sitting here and not doing it? So it's a mind trip.
It's kind of like gambling. Like, you're on the roulette table, you know.
Wow.
Next yeah. one's going to hit.
And the blow on it. All right.
Yeah.
Jesus. Insertion.
Jesus.
Come on. Yeah. It's true. It's just, it's all about that. And I think, you know, through this, the one thing that I have to say when it comes to faith is that I know that I couldn't have done this alone. And when I say alone, I don't mean like alone, my husband and our community, but I mean alone with God. Because, I mean, I see people struggle. Like, there's people who struggle in his family, and I see people who struggle, and I'm just like, gosh, they're doing this journey by themselves. Like, by themselves. There's no one to lean on. Like, physically, you have people, but there's nothing like leaning on God. And during that time, my faith was so strong. And
of course, after every no.
I mean, I went through it. I mean, there were times that I hated him. I was like, I was so angry. I'm like, why? You know, why is this happening to me? Why are you making me go through this? And I knew there was going to be a silver lining. Like, I just knew there was going to be something that, you know, he was preparing us for something. So I just kept on, and I just kept on leaning in and leaning in and leaning in and believing that it was going to happen. Now, believing switched to believing for this miracle to happen with me, you know, as in my egg, to, okay, God, you know that I want to be a mom. You know that I want to be a mom so much. So I don't know what that's going to look like, but I know you want me to be a mom. So I'm just going to let go and see what happens. But it's such a fine line, right? What my mind trip was, where's the part of me letting go and controlling, right? So right. If I wanted to do this again, is that me controlling? Mm. You know, it was right. So hard to define.
Yeah.
Am I controlling my situation? Am I letting go and letting God? You know, as I say,
or is it faith without works is dead, and you got to put some works in it?
Right. Like, what is it? And it was so hard. And this is the most amazing thing that happened. Sad, but amazing. I was like, I got to do this one more time. And I was doing a pilot in New York, and it just so happened. I said, Sai, there's this doctor that I found before I went to New York. I found this doctor that was literally like the now guru of all IVF. He's in New York, and I booked this pilot, and it's in New York. I said, this is meant to be. This is like, this is the guy. I went in, I saw him, I brought all my paperwork when I was shooting. I saw him on my day off, and he's like, yeah, let's do this. I'm going to put you on a 6-month plan, and you for sure will get pregnant. I was like, this is amazing. 6-month plan puts me on this. I do about to start my IVF treatments. It was June. I remember I'm walking in. We're starting that night. I have to walk in and get, they have to see how many follicles they're working with. Went to go get my follicle count. I'm like, oh, there's going to be so many. And the doctor's like, I can't find anything. And I was like, no. I mean, check again, because I'm sure you're going to find. He's like, I mean, I see one maybe. When are you starting this IVF? I said, I'm starting tonight. He's like, oh, I wouldn't waste your money. Wow. And I was like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, and I still didn't want to believe it. I was like, that was a janky clinic. I'm like, I'm going to another one to get my eggs checked because maybe that guy didn't have the right equipment. And I just sat there at home and I was like, oh, okay, that's it. Mm. That's it. I'm sorry I get emotional about it, but like that was what I needed because I would have gone on and on and on. But I needed that moment. And I had friends that said, well, it's just this month. You can go again next month. I said, no, that's what I needed. I needed to hear. I needed to see that for me to say, okay, I'm done. And like that, I mean, that just was kind of the catalyst to a lot of grief and relief at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, because this is such physically taxing, emotionally taxing, financially taxing. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying, if this works, this last one, if that worked or didn't work, I was like, we're done. We can't do this anymore. Like, I can't do it anymore. Because the emotional roller coaster ride, still trying to be in this career, not telling anybody about it, you know, it's a lot. Gaining weight and not being able to say anything, you know, mm-hmm. and having, I remember somebody did say, you know, she's gaining a little bit of weight. And I was like, yeah, asshole. I'm trying to have a baby. Like, leave me alone. Do you know what I've been through?
What, even emotionally, like with each other, did it become like, did it weigh on your guys' like intimacy or did it make it stronger? Was it like y'all were in a fight together or was it in like, shit, this feels more like this is becoming like a chore and a chore that doesn't have like a happy outcome, even though like physically in the moment there's a happy outcome.
Yeah.
But was like every time you engaged it, like it wasn't for the moment, it was for what the moment could produce. So then it was hard to enjoy the process. Does that make sense? Mm.
Yeah, I think I meditate every day, and when I'm meditating, it feels painful sometimes. I just want to get up, and I don't want to think these thoughts. But in the long term, like all that dedication makes me strong and more balanced. So when we went through that, I mean, the heartbreak of seeing your wife and her seeing me, like, you know, in pieces, and thinking, oh, this thing that is meant to be our right or our privilege to have a child is not going to happen. What, we have to readjust our whole life plan. It felt awful and it was a chore. And it was like, oh, we've got to do, oh, I've got to what? I've got to go drive for an hour and a half to go and donate some sperm and then go back to work. I've got to do that again. I've got to fly to Atlanta this time. Oh, we've got to go to that doctor. We've got to spend how much money? Wow. It was horrible. But when you go through something like that together, and no matter how much you're fighting, when you stick at it, it does what I said it before in the meditation. It glues you together without knowing it.
Mm.
You
know? Wow.
So it was painful, but I think without it, like, I don't know if we would still be together, you know? Like, I really don't, because we both want to live fulfilled lives, and to do that, I think you have to be unified with your partner, because otherwise you're going to have those little differences when you're not completely unified can make life miserable sometimes. So all that pain made us a unit, you know? That's how I feel.
I think one of the things that helped us stay together was our community. We have a solid group of friends, also and our friends from church, where we would call upon them whenever we needed. I mean, they would rally around us. They would all come to our house. We had prayer circles with strangers, people that we didn't even know, that would just show up and pray for us. And that's how I met a lot of people that I'm now really close with, were these strangers who just showed up at my home and just powerful prayer. I mean, this one girl I remember who she lost her baby. She laid her hands on me, and I've never had a vision like this before, but like had this vision of God holding these two children, and like the whole room went black, and here was this light with two babies, and I felt it so clearly. And I had an abortion when I was a lot younger, And now looking back, I was like, I feel like this was the one child that I let go of and the one that was coming in. I mean, when I say there was so much that I had to reconcile, not getting pregnant, thinking back to that moment of when I did what I did, was one of, that was to me one of the hardest. It took me years to forgive myself for what I did. And now here I am trying to get pregnant, and I just think of that moment so strongly of how could I have done that? Is this God punishing me?
Damn, that is a mind fuck, like for real.
Mind fuck. Like that last time that I picked up that phone when the doctor called us to say, you know, am I pregnant? Am I not? And he said, I'm not. I sat there and I was just like, this is all my fault. This is God punishing me. This is something that I did that I will, I'm never going to get pregnant now because of what I did. And it just, there's no way that that can't creep up in your mind. Of what would such, what would that child have looked like? What, you know, how old would he or she be right now? Would I even be, would we be going through this right now if we had a, you know, we had our own kid right now? So it was a lot.
And then the next step to actually making it happen, right? What was the, what did it finally turn out to?
Well, it was either, I think once we got past the realization that it's not going to be Camille's a genetic child, it was playing around with the idea of a donor egg or an adoption. So that's what we came to. Right.
Yeah, and I was, first and foremost, I was just like, yep, adoption, expensive. We had already spent so much money, so we were like foster to adopt. He wasn't so keen on the idea. And I mean, I was going down the rabbit hole looking at these foster children, just being like, are you kidding? There's so many kids around here that just need like, a loving, family. A family, safety, you know, beautiful children, thousands here in Los Angeles. And he just couldn't let go. You really wanted.
This was the real crunch time. And if I can be totally, totally honest, like the thoughts that went through my head were this. It was, okay, unfortunately, my wife cannot have her own child, but I still can have my genetic child. Why should I go through never experiencing it when she can't, but I can? And that sounds like a really selfish thing to say as I'm saying it, but it was my internal dialogue.
It's very human.
Yeah. Right. And that's where, that's where our argument, like that, this is where we started to like kind of break down.
After all that fighting together, this is where we were, going apart. And long story short, I consulted a lot of my mentors and friends, and we had conversations about it. And I agreed. Like, I let it go. In my head, I was like, do you know what? This is the path. Like, we are more important staying together than me thinking I know what's right for my life. So we started looking at fostering and adopting.
Which is where I started my nonprofit for foster kids.
What's it called?
Foster a Dream. Yeah. So that stemmed from Silver Lining. That stemmed from not being able to have a baby. And now it's like taken out a life of its own. And we're helping hundreds, hopefully thousands someday, foster kids in Los Angeles.
That's amazing.
But the thing is through that, all I needed him to be at that place that I was at. I don't know why, but I was like, I don't think, because I didn't think he got it.
Right.
I was like, you know how they say walk a mile in someone else's shoes or whatever that saying is in order to really understand? Like, I needed him to really step in the position that I was in, which was I am never going to know what my genetically, like a child from my genes, my DNA or my genes are going to look like. And I wanted him to know what that feeling was like by saying yes. By saying yes to taking on a child that was neither of ours. It was almost to me, it was like, it's an even playing field. And I know it's horrible to say that, but just like, I just needed him to be on that plane. And when he was, I said, okay, let's do the donor. Let's do this donor. And if it doesn't work, we will do the foster to adopt.
I mean, the donor story is...
I know.
How much time do we have?
Tell us.
Go.
Okay. So it's one, finding
try and condense it.
Okay, fine. Finding the donor, it's kind of tricky, but we turned it into like a fun thing because here we are. We're out, you know, we go out for sushi and we're like, that waitress is kind of cute. What do you think? He's like, she's kind of cute. I'm like, she kind of looks like me, right? Don't you think she looks like me? She does kind of look like you.
We were going to ask like total strangers if we could pay her to have her eggs.
Like
we're going to do it. When we found the perfect aesthetic girl and then, and we talked to her and she was the one, we were going to just...
Excuse me, can I get some more ranch? And also, and an egg. How are your eggs?
Would you like to sell your eggs? No, we would go to parties like my Zumba teacher, you know, they're all Latin. So we were showing up at the party and we're like, oh, she's cute. What do you think? What do you think about her? Should we ask her? I mean, she's kind of looks exactly... I'm like, it was the same story everywhere we went. And you have to turn it into something fun, you know, because it's so
heavy. That was a fun memory.
Yeah, that was. That was. And then...
And the websites. Oh, like, you know, if you look at like ASOS or something, but like, you just all these different, like, just girls. Just all multi different nationalities.
And when you're picking a donor, is it, what information do they give you about the donors?
It depends. So, some places, like if you're going to a cryobank, they give you all the medical history, age.
Family history, I'm assuming.
Family history. And you get a couple pictures. That's it.
Of them as an adult or their baby pictures?
Adult. Then there are some places that only give you a baby picture. And you're not allowed to see what they look like as an adult. Like, I couldn't make that leap.
Yeah, no. That's crazy.
I'm like,
things could have went terribly wrong after this three-month photo.
I'm like, that is a cute baby, but what do you look like now? And why do you not want to show me?
Yeah.
They peaked early. Yeah. Like, eighth grade was their cap.
But even like, it's so crazy. The Latin market for donors is very small. Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah. I'm like, y'all, like, we can have babies, so why aren't you selling your eggs? Sell your eggs, ladies. Sell your eggs. I mean, there was like, I mean, I have like a funny donor file. I have to show you.
I need to see this.
It's insane. I mean, a woman with like tattoos on her face and on her neck. I was like, so this is what I get when I go into the Latina category.
No. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was like, okay, no, I'm not going to choose you.
But we were specific. We wanted Cuban, Puerto Rican. We wanted your exact matching.
Doesn't exist. Yeah. Doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's hard, especially those two cultures.
Yeah. Exactly.
We don't really get along like that.
They don't. I know. It doesn't. Yeah, it didn't exist. I did find a Cuban girl, and then I asked for video, like, because this one was now a more expensive one. It was like the elite donor place that was like $60,000 for her. But I was by that time, my mind was like gone. I was like, I need it. I need her. Send me a video. She sends me a video. And she was like, depressing. I was like, I can't. I don't want. I'm happy.
Yeah,
right.
He's not so happy sometimes. I'm like, I can't mix his genes with not so happy.
We need a positive life.
I'm like, I need someone that's like me. So we ended up by accident one night. I'm going to sleep and I guess that I wanted to be a surrogate. So this place calls me back and says, oh, hi, congratulations. Yes, we'll sign you up to be a surrogate. I was like, oh, no. I don't want to be a surrogate. I'm looking for a donor. Like, oh, we have that too. Are you cool with Mexico? And I was like, yes, I'm very cool with that. But I've looked around here. I can't find anything. She's like, no. Are you cool with Mexico? And I was like, well, what about Mexico? And she goes, well, I have all these girls in Mexico that are like international and...
This was like the model page for donors.
Yada, yada. She goes, I'm like, send me the book. But I've seen everything. But just send me the book. She sends me the book. I was like, what the heck? It was like,
telenovela stars.
It's just like
elite.
I'm just like, what is this? Like,
we're gold mine.
It really was. Like, I mean, anything you wanted, redhead, blonde, did it, but they're all Spanish, like of different sorts. Some were Mexican, some were Venezuelan, some were Argentinian, some were Brazilian. And we found this one girl, totally set on her. And we'll make this long story.
This is the 21-year-old.
17. No, she was 19. The 19-year-old.
The first girl.
The first girl. Right. 19, whatever, we're like, okay, she's going to be the end-all, be-all, the answer to our prayers. He's going to go to, we're supposed to go to Mexico to deposit the sperm.
I go to Mexico.
Wait, not yet. I get a job. I prayed for a job. I went to a neighborhood group, and I was like, guys, what I would really want is to get a job right before we put the embryos in me because I just haven't worked, and we spent so much money, and I really need a job. Well, I got a job. I got 2 episodes on The Good Doctor.
Nice.
But
amazing episodes. Go watch them. Which she also played a pregnant woman again.
I played a pregnant woman. So I'm like, oh, shoot. But the dates fall when we're supposed to be in Mexico. You can go do the sperm by yourself. I'm like, I'm going to shoot this in Vancouver. He goes...
This goes to Mexico. He can't speak a word of Spanish. In search of an egg. Right? I take a friend with me. But long story short, again, I get to Mexico. We go. And my thing was, like, I don't want to see this girl. Like, I don't want to be heartless, but I want it to be a business transaction. I walk in there. There's the girl. Just walking around. I'm like, all right, that's the girl.
But she was pretty.
She was pretty, but it was weird seeing her. I do my business.
Did you get to see what her personality was like?
No, because she didn't know.
She sent me a video. No, I got the video.
Okay.
But we got the video. She was nice. Very happy.
Hola.
See?
Soy Jessica. Okay. Continue.
So I donate my sample and I leave and they're going to extract her eggs and they're going to mix it together, do all the stuff. So I'm sitting there in Mexico and...
Don't do the punchline yet.
The doctor
called. Do the punchline yet.
Uh-oh. Punchline?
Yeah, the punchline comes with this side of the story.
Okay, give us your side.
I'm confused.
What? You'll see.
I'll tell you what happened. Right? So I walk into the doctor's office.
Oh, it might ruin the punchline, guys.
I didn't know you were telling jokes. I sit down. You stop me. The doctor looks me in the eyes.
Stop.
And I look at
And stop. And stop right there. So okay. Then cut to... Vancouver, where I'm on set, The Good Doctor. I'm like so happy. The eggs are being extracted. My husband's giving his sample, and I'm getting a prosthetic belly like put on me. 36 or 38 weeks pregnant, my character was, and I have it. Oh, because I was also doing a self tape by myself with my computer by myself. You know, have you ever done one of those?
Yeah.
So I had my computer, and it was already filming. When they FaceTime me, and I didn't know this, I totally had forgotten. So I have it. They call Dr. Miguel. So funny, because very heavy accent. Camille, I'm like, yes, Dr. Miguel. How's everything going? Look at me. Look how funny. Ha ha ha! I'm having this belly put on me.
But I've already spoke to him before this.
You have, and he said, not so good news. I said, what do you mean, not so good? I was just like, how many eggs do we have? And he's like, well, she messed up on the tiger shot. Tiger shot. I'm like, trigger the trigger shot? The last shot that you're supposed to do with IVF. Because the girl has to go through IVF. Oh,
the girl messed it up. He says to me, we got no eggs. No. Like, what do you mean we got no eggs?
Oh my goodness.
I just flown all this way and giving you all this money. You got no eggs. We got no eggs.
She ovulated all 17 eggs. No. Gone. Bon voyage. Whatever.
And you still have to pay them?
We paid them.
So the donor agency, the IVF clinic was like,
we should condense it a little.
Okay, fine.
It's too many details. All right. We paid them. We had a fight with them because they're saying there's nothing we can do. And I'm saying, well, if we're looking at it as a business, like you didn't look after your product and we paid for the product, we didn't receive it. Nothing we can do. They try and wangle us for pick another girl. They put the prices up.
They give us the catalogs and the prices are up. I'm like, whoa, I'm like,
this is a joke now. We agree. I'm like, all right, we'll give you $1,500 more. All right. And the doctor who's going to do the IVF treatment, he'll just do it for us. So all we've got to do now is pay for more for the girl, even though they messed up. So we say we'll give you $1,500.
And this lady sold her. She's like, well, she's a proven donor.
Proven
and
donor.
She has a baby. So we elevated her status. In a month? He's like, she's like, oh, yeah, in a month. Last time she got like 18 eggs for their last clients. And I was like, okay.
So we go back to Mexico. Same thing. This girl messed up some show.
No, she didn't mess up anything. She just had one
egg we get. We have about 16, 17 eggs to choose from so we can have a family for the future. All this money we paid, like, all right, we can maybe dig in 2 years and have a brother or sister, right? This is the good thing about it. One egg from this next girl. So we're not paying you no money. Like, I want my $1,500. You ain't getting your $1,500.
No,
trust me, I ain't giving it to you. Do what you want. Kill me. This is a pride thing.
Oh, well, that's Mexico. Be careful with that. Yeah. Threats are not empty over there.
No, we were looking over our shoulder everywhere we went. We were like, do we see her? Do we see that? Do you see that cab driver?
So to wrap it up, like this one egg is our son.
What was it? Embryo. The clinic was so nice, and they were like, Camille, we know how much this is, the golden embryo. It's a, we laugh. It's no, you, no, so much money was spent on this one embryo. And I'm like, okay, but you know how important, like, I've put in 25 embryos in my body and not one has taken. And now you're telling me that we have one embryo.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it worked.
But when they put it in,
it worked. Can you believe it?
We were like, all right, we've seen so many embryos go in and one is not going to make a difference. So I think you were the same. I was like, I mean, this is done. This is a done deal. One is not going to work.
Yeah,
because if that didn't work, we have another 7, 8, 9 to choose from, right, to keep doing it. But we didn't have that.
We had one. So this is where I was like, okay, but I was already doing the foster, you know, foster a dream. So I was like, it's cool. It's fine. If this doesn't work, we've already resigned to what we were going to do.
Yeah.
And then here I am, like, got pregnant. It happened. It worked.
And this was the first time you got pregnant.
Ever. Yeah. I mean, since, yes.
Right. But yes. In the treatment.
Yes. First time
you got pregnant. And then, so what was that like for you briefly? Because I know we have to wrap it up. Any fear that you had to battle with, like, keeping that pregnancy?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't. It's crazy because, you know, when you have the baby, when you have the embryo inside of you, it's like I just have my acupuncturist in the back of my head saying, be a granny, be a granny. So yeah, it's everything you eat, any movement you make, you fear that you're going to lose this baby. But
I mean, remember what happened?
Yeah, we did. We hit a major roadblock. I started bleeding crazy. And we went to the doctors, and in the middle, I went to the bathroom at the doctor's office and just...
Can I jump in there and tell you what I saw? Like, I dropped her off because she's bleeding. So we bomb it down to the hospital. I drop her off. I go apart. I come back up. They rush me into the bathroom. She is on the floor, blood everywhere.
Oh.
And what looks like a fetus on the floor, huge clump. And
okay, that's...
It was.
No, that's fine.
I break down on the floor.
Oh.
I'm just crying my heart out. She's crying
like, We lost a baby.
I saw the baby on the floor. We go in and the doctor's doing an ultrasound. He's like, let's just make sure. And he's like, hang on a minute. I hear a heartbeat.
No, you didn't hear it? Oh, the minute the ultrasound started.
I'm on the floor.
It was like, wow.
I didn't hear nothing.
And I was like, what the heck is going on? I'm like, your baby's okay. What the heck just happened? I mean, everybody from the nurses, like, had rushed in.
I'm so sorry. Because it looked like a fetus and it was just a blood clot, apparently.
Well, do you know what's interesting? Is that I ended up having something. I don't remember the name of it, otherwise I won't say it. But at the end of my pregnancy, when I delivered the placenta, we couldn't keep it. They sent it out for tests because they said, your placenta, the problem with it is what normally happens with twins. So I'm wondering.
I often think that it was a twin on the floor.
Oh, my God. So maybe...
Yeah.
Wow.
Because it looked too much like
a baby.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh my goodness.
Like, I saw it.
That's incredible.
So we're ending on that note.
I was over here thinking like it was something super like spiritual, like this coming out of you was all the failed attempts, like it's like cleansed out now and
maybe
then the life is.
Well, I mean, look, there's still a beauty in the fact that I feel this is like that story in the Bible with Gideon, right? Gideon was the one that laid down the fleece to test God, right? And he had started the war with thousands and thousands of soldiers. And by the end of it, after he asked God, hey man, I'll go to war if you do has to show up on this fleece, and that'll let me know that I'm going to win the war. So he went to God like twice, asking God to show him a sign because he didn't have no faith in it.
Mm.
God showed him the sign. And then by the end of it, then he's like, all right, I'm going to go to war. And then God says, nah, but you got to let go all of your army. Only keep 300.
Yeah.
So he's like, nah, you got too many people. I need this to be a me thing. So you had your chance. Now I'm going to show you my chance. So now you're in a worse situation now than you were when you started. Because you were scared when you had 10,000 men.
Mm.
Now that you have all the faith in the world because I did your little sign, I need you to let go of all these men. And I only want 300. So now you're in a worse situation, full of faith. So anyone, whatever, but still, what I'm saying is, like, this seems like that situation where it's God was just showing off. Like, out of all this crap that happened, he was literally like, all I need is one.
Yeah.
Like, I just need one.
Yeah.
And that transposes into so many parts of your life. Mm. Like, all he needs is one moment, one opportunity, one person, one embryo, one idea, one dream. And I can create life with that.
Come on.
Yeah. That's crazy to me. Like, that when I heard her say that, I'm like, damn, all this shit and all he needed was just one. He didn't need the doctors. He didn't need anything. He just needed one little egg.
And do you know what's interesting? Like, we look at him now. We have a boy, Morrison Rafael K.
Nice.
And we look at him now. We're like, gosh, if any of those times would have worked, we would have never had him. Like, it wouldn't be him.
Wow.
And he is, and I'm not just saying this because he's our child, he is the happiest kid I have ever seen. Just smiles, laughs every time. Even when I'm putting him to sleep, he's just smiling at me.
Wow.
I was like, would you stop smiling at me? You're supposed to go to bed.
Oh.
He's the sweetest.
But also, like, of all the stuff that we went through, and more you, like, it was more happening to you, how much is that going to serve you as an adult and as a mother? And how much is all that going to help somebody else?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's made you such a strong person, which is what you needed to go for the next part of your journey. And you wouldn't have had that strength without it. No. I believe that.
And beyond that, it's giving you a story that is unlike any other person. And even more than that, it's given your son a story.
Yeah.
Because when he comprehends what y'all went through,
the fight
for him,
like,
when he grabs the weight of it,
yeah.
You may tell him the story, he may laugh as he's growing up, but there'll be a time in his life where it's gonna click. Mm. It's gonna be like, maybe it's when he starts working and he realizes, shit, it's hard to make money, it's hard to survive, and I literally have a price tag.
You do.
Some kids don't. Some kids, you are worth the world, not the fool. I have a price tag for you.
Yeah. I got receipts.
This is what it costs and a whole bunch of love.
That's so valuable. Like, that kid will grow up knowing how wanted he truly was wanted.
Yeah.
Like, in all the odds, like, there could have been so many times. I just think of, like, man, after the first time, like, that would have just been so easy, and it would have been justified to just give up and walk away and let go. But to just keep going after it, that's just, it's even a story, just a resilience and persistence and just all of that, you know?
But, you know, speaking out about it, there are so many other people out there that there's a community, and I'm now a part of that community. And people, every morning I say to him, I wake up on my DMs and there's men. Because we always think of this as infertility is a women's journey. It's not. It also happens to men. So to hear, like, men tell me their stories and women tell me their stories, and to find, you know, common ground. Like, I was just reading this woman's blog yesterday and I was like, oh my gosh, that was so helpful. She spoke about, like, the grieving of your DNA. And I was like, gosh, I did that. Wow. But I didn't realize that's part of egg donor. That's part of accepting an egg donor, is you have to grieve the loss of your DNA. I was like, gosh, that resonated with me so much. Thank you. So it's just, there's a community out there of women and men that need us to speak about this, because
I mean, I'm excited to hear what people say from this, podcast, because I know they're going to come out of the woodworks. There's people out there that you really do not know what they're going through until you have the courage to just say, this is my life. This is my story.
Thank you guys so much for sharing your story with us.
It's so unbelievable.
Thank you.
I'm like thinking the whole time, at some point, this needs to be a movie.
A movie. Are you writing your movie yet?
This should be
Queen,
a movie.
Write your movie. This, come on.
I'm feeling it. Your meet
cute story.
I'm feeling it like a movie.
Everything from the meet cute story.
It's you know what? In the vein of the Channing Tatum one.
No, where he gets an accident. The story is told through the eyes of your son.
What movie is that?
Nobody steal it. I will punch you right. I will come for you. I will if cut anybody steals you. This,
don't worry,
I will come for you.
I'm gonna edit it out. No, I'm just kidding. There's a story. There is a movie that is like that recently that came out.
It's called How I Met Your Mother. It was on CBS.
No. Exactly. Like last year, the year before, yeah. And it was Spanish.
Yes.
Do you remember? Did we see it together?
Yes, we saw it together, and it was so emotional. People were leaving the theater.
Yes. What was it?
It's not.
That was Catherine Hahn.
No, it was the guy who made This Is Us, right?
Yes, the guy who made This Is Us.
Oh my God. It goes back three generations and how their stories were intertwining the whole time.
All told from the son's eye. I'm going to find this movie so y'all can watch it.
Okay. But it's on Amazon Prime now.
Yes, people left the theater because it was so. But as I'm hearing you say this, I'm like, this is that movie, but even better because there's like multiple twists. Like there's multiple cliffs with the audience is going
to
be like.
If anybody who wants to write it, let me know. Hello, anybody out there?
Mm-hmm. No, I do know somebody. Yo.
Well,
thank you guys so much.
This has been amazing.
I feel so lucky to have heard this story. We always end with this benediction, and it's so proper after this episode. So we say that we pray that you find a seat at the table, but if you don't, you are always welcome at ours.
Oh, cheers. Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers.
We used to sail the ocean side by side, hand in hand together for life. When the waves start to get rocky, baby, just know that you got me. Never gonna let up on our love. Sometimes it make you crazy, but you gotta know you're my lady. Never gonna give up, never gonna let up on our love. You know our love is real. You know our love is real. You know our love is real. You know, our love is real. Yeah, love lost, love found. You and me together like a new sound. And I can be your everything, everything. As long as you will never leave, never leave. I've never been superstitious, but girl, whenever you walk out the door, I cross my fingers, hoping that you would come back. Ignore the fact that you were so beyond me. It's amazing how we fold together, origami. I call you mommy even though I got a mother. But baby, the way you treat me just kinda reminds me of her. And it's cool that we connect, give each other respect. When my phone rings, you ain't gotta check. Cause baby, you the only one, yeah, I'm feeling blessed. And every time I look outside the window, I'm a wreck. Cause I don't wanna see you leave, I just wanna see you by me. Baby girl, you remind me that
You know our love is real. You know our love is real. You know our love is real. You know our love is real.
Yeah. You ain't gotta question if I hold it down. Girl, I'm happy you and your mom stayed around. I love the way she raised you strong enough to be a queen. And it's fitting cause your boy was raised a king. And all our subjects would throw flowers at the bottom of your feet. Cause they know that you're too fly to touch the street. And even if I have to be sour to keep you sweet, I'll give the world my mind, but they'll only get a piece, you know.
You know our love is real. You know our love is real. You know our love is real. You know our love is real.
Ha ha ha.